the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
For the week trending, we're joined by Dave Hanratty, host of the No Encore podcast, and by Sarah McGuinness, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail. So can you tell us, Sarah, please, about Kieran Mullooly, Independent Ireland MEP's use of artificial intelligence when writing to the European Commissioner, the European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen?
Yes, Matt. So this is quite an extraordinary story, and fair play to the journalist behind it, Mairtis Carroll from The Journal. Kieran Mullooly, who many people would have recognised from his work in RTE, you would have kind of assumed, being a journalist himself, he would have had kind of an appreciation for sourcing of information. But he wrote this, what sounds like a very bizarre letter to Ursula von der Leyen during the week, urging the EU to deliver more aid into Gaza.
Which is fair enough,
and a lot of Irish MEPs are doing it. But it included this fictional story of a young girl who lived in Rafah called Ghazi, and did not declare that this was just a hypothetical situation. For all intents and purposes, reading the letter, you would assume this is a case study of a real living person. But it just went into really inappropriate territory, obviously, given the amount of children who are malnourished, who are on the brink of starvation in Gaza, and all the horrendous footage and reporting that has come out there. And earlier this week, I think it was the Palestinian special envoy to the US or broke down in tears, basically talking about the condition that children are being forced to live in. And Kieran Mullooly went on this tangent in his letter, quoting lyrics from a Swedish House Mafia song, which is like a dance song.
Well, Dave, you're the music expert.
Pointing
here
at me like I'm a Swedish House Mafia fan. I just want to categorically state for the record, not a fan. Now, neither is Kieran Mullooly, as it turns out, because he has addressed this and he has said that the first half of the letter, he used AI for the structure of it or whichever. He has said that the second half of the letter was actually written by a staffer of his so he's thrown a staffer of his under the bus.
Did he sign the letter in his own name?
Oh yeah.
And it's his responsibility.
And he named the staffer, which I was like, Jesus, don't do that. But his argument for this was,
the amount of times I've been tempted to throw producers and production staff under the bus,
you'd never do that, Matt, would you? It would never happen, ever. Never in the history of anything.
Not even when Sarah was working with us. It did ever happen to her, I think.
Can you verify that?
I can verify that. Well, I never do anything wrong. Okay. Anyway.
This is real live journalism here, guys. We're grilling the host. But here's the thing that happened was he claimed that he's a very, very busy man, which I don't doubt. And he says that all of the information in this letter came from over a thousand emails he kept saying about that he's received, and this composite character that was made up effectively what happened. And he did say, like, I didn't even know that the Swedish House Mafia lyrics were in there, didn't know what they were, someone had to explain to me who they were, and I'm not a fan of them. And also that someone had sent an email with that quote in it. So that's kind of where the inspiration came from. Which, look, listen, it's interesting because I saw that yesterday morning and immediately burst out laughing because I was like, what a strange combination of words in a headline. But I think, as Sarah kind of alludes to, it is a shame because it is taking away from the gravity of what is going on. And I do want my MEPs to be trying to get through to Ursula von der Leyen and to try and change the situation over there. But I found this to be like move over the time when Leo Varadkar said that Avicii song was his, you know, his Camino song. This is the new Irish associated with a weird song thing that I'm never going to be able to forget now. So
I don't think Kieran Mullooly is ever going to be dancing to Swedish House Mafia, though.
Not at this rate, no. But I do think as well, like, AI, I'm probably going to talk about it further, but, like, it's this thing of, it can do things, it can be helpful, and I can see the argument in some respects, but I'm very, very wary of it in situations like this, and also when people, in my opinion, are just being kind of pure lazy.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting, because I was talking to Barry O'Sullivan a couple of weeks ago, who is a professor in AI and the ethics of AI.
At UCC, I think.
Yes, in UCC, and he actually was on the government's AI advisory council, and he kind of has publicly said, like, the Department of Enterprise basically updated their policies on the use of AI in-house, and he was kind of like, I think everyone needs to slow down here, like, we really cannot underestimate how much politicians rely on the confidence of the public, and that any use of AI should be, you know, come with like an even further underpinning of human oversight.
Yeah, but maybe if Fianna Fáil TD Cathal Crowe had turned to artificial intelligence, he wouldn't have made an eejit of himself in his statements in relation to what the British Army did here in Ireland.
This was another one where another story this week where I think everyone was like, what the hell? So this was again Gaza related. There were statements in the Dáil, I think on Wednesday, talking about You know, basically TDs were given the chance to make statements, and there were a couple of really powerful contributions. Liam Quaid from the Social Democrats stuck out as he worked in mental health care, and he was talking about the emotional toll of all this. But anyway, Cathal Crowe said that he basically kind of contextualised what's going on in Gaza in terms of the conflict we've had on our own island. And he basically said, like, even when things were at their worst, the British Army never retaliated by bombing or shooting the civilian population of Ireland, which is just a crazy thing to say. He kind of came out later and said, oh, these are off the cuff remarks. You know, like, I was in an impassioned speech and I really regret saying that. But at the same time, it's kind of like, come on.
It's all the more bizarre because he studied history and became,
he was a history teacher.
And became a teacher, yeah. And then also in his kind of contrition statement that followed, he said, my own family have been subject to such attacks. So it's like, what kind of a weird...
He led the boycott of a planned state commemoration of the Royal Irish Constabulary in 2020.
Did his brain just shut down for a minute? Because, I mean, and to go back to Ciarán Mullooly, he made the point that, you know, like, I only have 60 seconds sometimes when I'm standing up in Parliament, and I really want to get the point across. And I guess he was trying to make, like, a point about the level of retaliation versus whatever, but he just, like, scored one of the biggest own goals in recent Dáil memory.
And I think, now, this might be a bit too inside baseball, but something that has been doing my nut in recently is all the kind of talking about doing things in the Dáil, the amount of statements, sessions just regarding statements, whereby everyone stands up and says the exact same thing and nothing is done about it. We saw it particularly last week when backbenchers, government backbenchers and the opposition all stood up and condemned the fact that people, young children are waiting so long to access disability services. I might get in trouble for saying this, but I just think it's so shallow, it's so vain, and that time could be better spent doing things that are actually productive
thoughts and
that
prayers.
Actually will help,
like,
people.
Just thoughts and prayers syndrome. It's the same
kind of the clip
empty,
for social media.
Empty speech, yeah.
Well, sorry, and this is totally not on our list of things we were going to, but you must have noticed as well, Sarah, and I think your own newspaper, the Irish Daily Mail, had it this morning, about the civil servants, the heads of two government departments, getting up and effectively telling government ministers that they can't get on with what they want to do. You can't have data centres and housing when the government is saying we need to do both, provide the electricity for both. And you also have the head of the housing department,
or the Department of Housing,
saying we don't need this, which the government has staked a lot of us. It's remarkable, some of the stuff that's going on. But over to you again, Dave. Tell us a little bit about, this is maybe the worrying thing, about the pace at which artificial intelligence is taking control. Let's get dystopian. The artificial intelligence that won't switch itself off.
Who saw this coming? One of my favourite memories, Matt, is when I was a schoolboy. I must have been about eight. And my brother came to pick me up at school, my older brother, and he had a copy in his hands of Terminator 2 Judgment Day on VHS. I'll never forget that day. That film was incredible. Yes, I was too young, but it's brilliant. But what we're seeing now with this OpenAI software that has ignored an explicit instruction to shut itself down, I'm like, that's Skynet. Like, that... this is the big fear, that a machine which is being programmed and effectively just told, now just turn yourself off there, and it somehow circumvented those protocols in a bid to keep itself online. Other different forms of AI have actually been responding positively to this and doing so. But this one, I think it's OpenAI's, the O3 model, which has been described as the smartest and most capable to date, which should send a chill down your spine, did not shut itself down when asked politely to do so.
An awful lot of artificial intelligence at the moment, Sarah, has been used for fake video and fake photographs.
Oh, yeah.
So was that what happened when President Macron of France was trying to get off a plane, that it was a video fake, which implied that his wife was not throttling him, but sort of pushing him in the face?
Yeah, well, that's exactly what the press team for the President and the First Lady of France came out with originally when this footage was captured by reporters. I think it was the Associated Press, who are like a very highly rated journalistic source, and the palace came out and said, oh, deep fake, didn't happen, not true, nothing to see here. And then very quickly had to come back afterwards and say, oh no, it was a moment of closeness, which is a revolting phrasing and also not at all what it looked like. There was nothing close or intimate going on there. And that the couple were decompressing one last time before the start of the visit and larking around. And then Emmanuel Macron kind of doubled down on this the other day. He was kind of like, I don't see what the big deal is here. But there wouldn't have been as much of a big deal if the palace hadn't lied and said it was a deep fake, I think, anyway. because the lie kind of shows that maybe there was something to be alarmed about there. They knew it looked bad, and they, I suppose, didn't want to give it. They knew that the kind of response of, oh, they're just larking around, wasn't believable.
I really don't want to lean into cultural stereotypes here, but I just couldn't help but think this is very French. This is a very French situation.
You've just leaned into a cultural stereotype.
I'm very sorry, but it just struck me as, well, they're French. This will happen. But I mean, what has happened on the back of this, though, is the entire relationship between Emmanuel Macron and his wife Brigitte has been completely reopened, because there is a 25-year age gap. I believe she was his teacher or a teacher when he was a student. And as a result, people have kind of said that, oh, that's clearly the same dynamic. It's clearly like this person's in charge, you're not, despite your lofty position in the world, and these things are supposed to happen behind closed doors, not the open door of an aircraft.
Dave, tell us about what's likely to happen in Dublin Airport this weekend and about the increased incidence of bad behaviour there.
Yeah, zero tolerance is the phrase of the day. If you're listening to me right now, and if you're one of the 480,000 passengers that are expected to go through Dublin Airport this weekend, please be on your best behaviour. That's the message coming down the track here. Effectively, it's up. Yeah, like over 30 incidents have already been reported to Dublin Airport Guard about bad behaviour and different things. You may be wondering exactly what those are. So the three most common incidents this year have been offensive behaviour on board an aircraft, obstructing or assaulting an authorised officer, and being intoxicated on board an aircraft.
That's when you get onto the flight. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff in the boarding gates as well, isn't there?
Yeah, and we've seen some kind of videos doing the rounds this year as well. So there's been like a 50% increase in incidents of disruptive passenger behaviour compared to 2023. And it's not just Ireland, it should be said. It's kind of something that the aviation industry is seeing across the board. There seems to be a weird, like we talk about lack of etiquette at gigs and such, but this is actually a situation where people are being arrested. So they're trying very hard to just tell people, look, just take it easy, have a good time, please don't cause any fuss, as we expect a huge volume of people coming through the doors.
Rick, pints and possibly other things being ingested to blame for all of this, do you think, Sarah?
Well, I couldn't comment on that, but yeah, like definitely.
I'm only asking you to speculate on things you might hear. I wasn't accusing you or anything like that.
I didn't think you were, but
we're on holidays next week.
I am on holidays.
You're flying
next week,
out next
but
week.
I will be sticking to Michael O'Leary's guideline of 2 drinks per limit or per flight or airport experience. I don't know which one it is, but yeah, it is definitely. I think after COVID, when people kind of were coming back to flying again, everyone lost a run of themselves because they're just so delighted to be in an airport and getting on a plane. But now, as we see this year, I think there's been an 80% increase in kind of violent instances at the airport. And it's gotten to the point now where staff are kind of making the intervention saying like, I shouldn't have to come into work and deal with this, which I think is fair enough, you know, particularly given that not everyone who's going on a flight is going to a stag do or a hen do or is in their 20s or 30s or 40s and not traveling with kids or whatever. So, yeah, it is weird how much it's kind of picked up this year. But
I saw a thing as well. I forget which country it was, but apparently some countries thinking about bringing in a law where if you stand up too early when the plane is kind of stopped at the end, you could be fined or arrested.
I would back that.
And you know, do not turn on your mobile phone until you exit the aircraft.
Yeah.
Everybody immediately puts on their mobile phone as soon as the wheels.
Can we add guitars to this? People who have a guitar on a plane. Anytime you see those viral videos, arrest that person. That's what I say.
If they take them out to sing.
100%, yeah. Just zero tolerance.
We're talking about zero tolerance. What about France looking to ban smoking on beaches, in parks and near schools?
And once again, I lean into my cultural stereotypes and say it's very French, isn't it? I mean,
I thought the French smoked everywhere.
If you think about France and you think about, you know, their culture and kind of the very laissez-faire attitude they have, you know, a nice glass of red, you know, like some beautiful food and probably a cigarette and beautiful looking people smoking them. So yeah, it's all changed. Now it's a case of trying to ban them on beaches, parks, and also crucially near schools. I think that's kind of a big element of it, kind of because secondhand smoke and there's health concerns where children are around. But what I would say is, good luck bringing this in. And like, it doesn't sound like €135 fine if you're caught. It's not great, but it's not exactly 5 years in prison, is it?
Okay, we're the country that brought in the original smoking ban in the workplace. I mean, how do you think it will go down to try and ban smoking outdoors?
Yeah, like the argument that Catherine Vautrin, the Health and Family Minister, is making is that the lungs of children need to be protected, but also the kind of free will of other people kind of needs to be acknowledged as well. And ultimately, I don't think there is a point in this because Vaping has completely changed the game in terms of nicotine consumption. You know, it's more child-friendly or teenager-friendly. There's the bright colours, the nice flavours. And we know that in terms of this might just turn more people to vapes and e-cigarettes, which in turn kind of normalises it. I was talking to someone who works in addiction the other week, and they were saying that like the kind of proliferation of vapes has really kind of normalised it for kids, and in the minds of teenagers they don't really realise the risks that are associated with it, because as they're brightly coloured, they're not like something that is like there's no fumes, heavy like fumes coming out of it, and you can't smell it, and if you do it might smell nice because it's a fruit flavour. So anyway, yeah, I would kind of question the I suppose the ramifications this is going to actually have, because it might just drive more people to vapes, and we know how that trend is going.
Okay, listening here says, I was on a flight the other day. One of the passengers had a meltdown during the flight because one of the other passengers took a selfie that seemingly she was included in. Didn't seem to be alcohol, though. And that brings us, I should have maybe brought this up when I mentioned about people immediately diving for their phones immediately when a plane touches down, but a suggestion that Ireland will eventually need a dedicated clinic to deal with phone addiction. I might actually have to sign in, given that I'm actually working off two phones, one in each hand at present.
I mean, that's very impressive. But yes, he may well be their first port of call. Look, to be fair, phone use, it's reflexive. I've got one on my hand right now reading my notes, but it is that thing of, it's very, very hard to put them down. And I grew up when I didn't have a mobile phone until I was a teenager, coming in much younger for people. But this is effectively the work or the theory of Professor Colin O'Gara from UCD, who apparently has been kind of keeping an eye on this for the last 12 years. And thinks that in the next 15 years, Ireland is going to have a dedicated setup to combat this. And it's not based on just, well, here's my theory, I've done some reading. He's saying that GP referrals are way up when it comes to kids having problems with phones, whether it is an actual visible addiction or just being completely unable to separate from them and taking up too much of their daily lives. So, I mean, like, it might sound a bit hysterical, but at the same time, I think that we probably do need to kind of stop and look at our relationship with our phones sometimes, and we just don't do. We just keep on using them.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with that. Like, there was a statistic there, and carried out by Deloitte, this report, and surveyed 1,000 people, but 74% of those people looked at their phone first thing in the morning, and I do that, and I'm like, that probably can't be good for the brain.
It can't. Listen, just saying, what are people like? The Giant's Causeway, I've said before, it's a bit of a disappointment when you see it. It doesn't look as glamorous as it did in the cover of a Led Zeppelin album. But can you imagine why people are trying to jam coins into the rocks? What are people like?
It's just so stupid. Like, because this isn't like the, because the article that that kind of one of the newspapers that had this, they mentioned the fact that, you know, there's a tradition of locking padlocks on part of a bridge in on bridges in Paris, and that was banned. But this phenomenon seems to be totally new and totally out of nowhere. And basically, the kind of organisers of the Giant's Causeway have had to say, like, this is actually like having an impact on the actual structure of the Giant's Causeway itself, which is just so ridiculous. Anyway. People are weird.
They are. Sarah McGuinness, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail. Dave Hanratty, host of the No Encore podcast. Thank you both for being with us.
The Last Word. With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.